Hi, everyone, and welcome back to RPG R&D. I am one of your hosts, Jess Geyer. I'm one half of One of Me Games, and I make role-playing games. And I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Craig Campbell. Hello, Craig.
Hello, Jess. Yes, I'm Craig Campbell. I am the owner of Nerdburger Games, and I, too, make tabletop role-playing games. And we are here again today with a returning guest, Sean. Hello, Sean. Welcome aboard.
Hi, I am part of Nerdy City, and I, too, make tabletop role-playing games.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show, Sean. Thanks for coming back. We keep roping you back in here.
It's fun.
And tell us a little bit about Nerdy City, since you just said I, too, make role-playing games. What is your role-playing game company?
We've been really leaning into the 80s as genre. We do Rememorex, which is our big hit. We did RPG Nasty, which I recommend to absolutely no one. Do not go look for it on Drive-Thru RPG. It is cheap, and you should not play it because it is dumb. And then I'm going to go all in on the reverse psychology on that one. We also have Commandroids, which is our 80s transforming robot game. I am excited to say that we are going to be at TFCon in Baltimore next weekend doing demos and running that. So that's going to be exciting. And you can make a cool transforming robot and, fight evil robots and evil scientists and use lasers and turn into jets and sports cars and blenders and things, which is fun. Do we have blender rule? Yeah, you can turn into a blender. Yes. I always have to remind myself, like, what? Oh, yeah, we did make rules for you to turn into almost anything.
Can you turn into a building? Because there's the scene in Big.
Big, yeah.
And the guy's like, what's fun about playing with a building?
I was so confused to that scene as a kid. I was like, I want a robot that turns into a building. That sounds huge and awesome. Like, and like nobody would see it coming, right? Like, you just like have like a building in the middle of like your city, and then like when a Godzilla comes, you just have the building get up and start fighting it. Like,
okay,
it's like a perfect,
honestly, that's kind of sick.
Right?
Solution
to Godzillification, which, as we were taught as children, is a huge problem in major metropolitan areas. So, yeah, I thought that was a really cool toy, and they were trying to treat it like it was lame. And he's like, it should turn into a giant bug. And I'm like, we already have those. Those are Insecticons. Make the building, right? we actually have rules for it's not playable because they're too big. But we have rules for entire cities that transform, because you've got,
Completely audio medium. You're pointing to.
I'm pointing to Metroplex behind me, who is a Autobot who turns into a city, and we wanted to include those rules.
But we're not talking about any of this today.
No, we're not.
Craig, what are we talking about? What is our topic for today?
Oh boy, today is sort of opposite day. We have spent a lot of time on this podcast with various guests now for many, many episodes talking about like how to do this thing as a GM, how to incorporate this other thing as a GM. And the same thing goes for how to develop a mechanic that does this or do this thing as a designer or a publisher. Today, we're going to talk about getting rid of stuff, like how to not do this thing anymore. Specifically for GMs, we're talking about when is the point and how do you handle it when you realize it's time to abandon a plot line or a theme or some, overarching component of the story that has been brought into the game and it just kind of isn't doing what it was supposed to do? Like, how can we identify those things? What can we do to kind of shift out of them? Outside of just being like, I never talk about it again, because that's a way to do it.
Right.
But there's also ways that you can kind of play it. You can, happily play it off the stage, right? Like they say, when people are getting awards and they play you off the stage, it's like, okay, we're done listening to you. We're going to have the transition music come up and we're going to get you out of there. But so how can we do that as GMs with various aspects of the story that just aren't functioning?
Yeah, when I saw this topic, the first thing I thought of was a bunch of abandoned plot lines in media properties that I really like. and that I did like at least. But Sean, I'm curious why you chose this topic to speak about today. Also, because I'm like, we talked to Sean about a lot of stuff, but interesting choice. Why? Explain.
I thought this was interesting because it's a really important thing to do. And I think one of the hardest things for me to do as a designer was learning how and when to abandon stuff, because it is really hard, right? Like you spend, you know, this whole sunk cost fallacy idea, right? The more time you spend making something, the harder it is to, you know, kill your babies and be like, well, we're just not going to do this thing. You know, and you can spend some time, you really fall in love with it, but like, you know, if it's not working, you have to let it go. And a big part of that is understanding that it's okay to do that, right? And I think that that's it's nobody tells you that. And if there's one thing that I really want to tell like any designer listening, if something isn't working, it is okay to abandon it, because you're not really abandoning it. What you're doing is you're putting it back on the shelf and you're going to go get it later. And even if you never go get it later, it feels better. And like part of the creative process is cutting the fat and making things work. So it is valuable to be able to be like, okay, I cannot make this aspect of this thing work. And I just felt like that's a very, very, very important part of design that I don't think it's talked about enough and don't get enough love. And it's a really hard part of design, which is, I think, part of why it doesn't get talked about enough.
I think that's like, I mean, it's one of the hardest parts of the creative process. And it's a surprisingly large part of it is editing down and giving things up. I think it's especially hard though when you're a GM, because like if I'm just creating something, the chances that anyone other than Alex sees it are little until I'm like ready to like actually start pushing it out, or like if people are actually looking at our Google Drive, which we have made available for past projects, but I don't think anyone's very interested in that. But if I'm the GM of something, I have a group of 3, 4, 5 people who have been paying attention, hopefully have been paying attention to what I've been doing and have been, you know, they might have been even taking notes on what I've been doing, and now I'm about to abandon an entire plot line on them because it's not working. How am I going to play this off? How am I going to make it like, how am I going to retain the continuity of this story? Because I think we're talking about abandoning plot lines, not necessarily shutting down the campaign, which is a little easier in my opinion. You can just say goodbye to a campaign whenever you want to, really. You can just go. But if you want to keep playing the game without like wrecking stuff or wrecking your future plans, like, oh my gosh. But step one is knowing what's not working, and that requires really paying attention to the players.
Objectively, like looking at it objectively, because especially if you're playing with a group that where you're friends and you all kind of know each other and it's a very big social outlet. So like, even if you're, you know, even if the storyline isn't doing what you want, like you're hanging around with your friends and you're all just joking and having a good time. And so it feels like everything's fine, but it's useful, I think, as a GM to kind of step back from it on the subjective side and try to look at things objectively and be like, okay, this was a plot line that I set up. Now that we've had it in play for a while, it doesn't look like the players are really engaging with it. You know, they don't seem to be invested in that. They became invested in this other thing, which I didn't plan for them to become invested in, because that happens all the time. Just, you know, taking that step back and thinking about it and then figuring out how to adjust the campaign out of it. Or if you want to kind of, you know, address it from kind of a meta, involve the players, like we always say, talk to the players, is you can bring it up, you know, at the end of a session or beginning of a session or even in between with an email or whatever, and say, hey, you know, I introduced this particular storyline with this villain that people, maybe I'm wrong, tell me I'm wrong, or tell me I'm right, is like, it doesn't seem it's just engaging everybody. We've all kind of gotten interested in this other thing and it's just kind of sitting in the background. And you know, is it worth, do you players want to return to it and make and kind of focus on it and ask them to be honest about it and tell them like, and if you don't, that's okay. Like give them permission even, to say, yeah, let's dump out of this.
It's not even necessarily that. And then sometimes that makes it easier. Something that you've set up that they haven't necessarily gotten into yet, but you've like hinted and stuff. And then you realize like, oh crap,
yeah.
This isn't going to work because of this other stuff I want to do instead. I need to find a way to shut this down magically. Like sometimes it's not even like just they don't like it. They're not biting. And it's something you liked or you thought they would bite on. Sometimes it's something that you like everyone thought that they wanted to be cool with, but you knowing far down the road, like, oh, oops, that's not going for a variety of reasons. That could happen. Somebody might have dropped out of your game. And is no longer available to like that was a plotline that kind of centered around that character, right? That might have happened, or something happens in someone's life, for example, they have something now that is a new trigger for them, and you have something in that plotline that you can't involve anymore. I've had that happen with stuff like house fires was one. Like stuff like that. And I'm like, oh, I'm not gonna bring this up. I'm gonna get rid of this thing.
I'm gonna leave this pyromaniac villain on.
Yeah,
on
the... right. I'm not gonna burn down this orphanage anymore. I gotta pivot. I gotta find like new ways to handle things. For the most part, that's never like completely derailed a plotline for me. But I mean, players coming and going certainly has. Or even adding new players.
So I think we're kind of looking at two different things here, right? Because like abandoning a mechanic in design and abandoning a plot line in an ongoing game that you are just running as a GM are different but related. Mm-hmm. And I can sort of tie them together by saying like, okay, so I've been running on Tuesdays, like my pride and joy is my Tuesday night game that I have been running since Rememorex was like an idea I had, right? And now it's, you know, three games in and like so it's become sort of a plot, you know, like it's very much a storyline. And what we actually use that game, Megan and I use that to determine what is and is not officially canon. If it hasn't come out in that game yet, we say like, that's not canon. And then we have like a weird level of canon where there's stuff that like a group of people in New Jersey know is canon and nobody else. And then there's stuff that's actually in the books that's like definitely canon that's, you know, that can't be changed. And that does give us a lot of opportunities to sort of change and drop mechanics and plot lines. In terms of just dropping plot lines, I find that like following the players, if I drop a plot line that isn't working, 9 times out of 10, the players don't really notice. And I'm dropping it because they weren't paying any attention to it. And I can even, if they ask about it, say, you know, oh, that resolved itself. So like, you know, every other night in the week, I am running a game, you know, a paid game somewhere either in Bayonne or Jersey City or Thursdays for a group of Canadians. It's a hell of a commute.
Wait, and what? Sorry, you go to Canada? Sorry, no, derailing your... I'm like, well, hold on.
It's on Discord. But I've been doing a group of friends in Canada have a game that I've been doing. It's also set in the Rememorex universe. And that's been going on for almost 2 years now, which is crazy. They're meticulous, right? And so what I've done is like I've gone like kind of like full on I've been trying to get like very like James Roberts, like I'm gonna drop hints for stuff that'll like pay off, mm-hmm. in like a year or two in that, yeah. one, because that one they make these like intricate notebooks of their characters' notes and drawings that they have drawn and written in character. They're beautiful, and it's stuff that like I have in the past and plan to in the future even use in like the games themselves because it's so well done. But like, you know, in my group in Bayonne, like it's, you know, it's a game store. So sometimes people can't make it. Sometimes people drop in and out and they have plot lines and it's easy enough to be like, oh, well, you know, John Doe's character went off to fight evil wizards on another continent or whatever, and likely to let it go. And there was even one where there was like a cyberpunk game that I was doing recently that I'm wrapping up. I'm actually doing the epilogue tomorrow. And I had a character drop out and I was considering having her come back as the villain in the last episode. And I was like, I don't want to, you know, like I haven't had a chance to talk to the player because, you know, it's a paid game. I'm not going to, it's not like somebody that I know that way. I'm not going to track them down. So I was just like, you know, I'm just going to leave it be. I'm going to say that character went off to whatever happy ending they needed. You know, like we don't really need to resolve that.
And you can use, you know, an abandoned plot line that the players bring back up. If, you know, like if you relate, you kind of hinted at some things and then it never really went anywhere. And somewhere down the road, the players say, you know, hey, you know what happened to X? You know, what happened? What was up with that? You know, and you don't have to tell right. them, well, you know, you clearly weren't all that interested in it. And I became less invested in it as time went by. What you can do is say, well, you know, you didn't pursue that immediately. You didn't kind of dig into it. And right. over right. here, these other people, because this is a whole world full of people that are getting things accomplished, and you could, you know, generate NPCs or something like other heroes or other spy agents or spy agency or whatever it is that your game has. Another group of supers that came and handled that situation, and they go, oh, you want to go find out what happened? Okay, well, here's what happened, and you can invent that, and that can kind of flesh out the world, and maybe that sparks something
if
that
you drop
does take you in another direction.
You can even go like,
and so well, the initial thing that
you thought it was this, but actually it's this, and now it's this other thing. You can sort of pivot it into what you want them to do, if you're like leave it kind of open ended enough. Yeah,
if you can, yeah. You know, we talk all the time about kind of quietly retconning things where you're like, you know, you're setting up the villain and the group is convinced it's a vampire. And you're like, oh, because of like a couple of offhanded things you
but
did.
But that's
you're,
it. Now
you're like, well, it's not a vampire. Yeah. It wasn't a vampire, but it is now.
I like what you were getting at with the like setting up other like that is a whole living world. And like, yeah, you could just say that things were resolved off screen, but you could then if they ask like, oh, well, now this is being brought up, here's what happened, you could do that. If you were really upset about them dropping the plot line or not taking your hints, another plucky group of heroes could come and chastise you for not doing the thing that you were supposed to be doing too. Like oh, you think you're heroes, like, but here's what we had to do. We had to clean up after you.
Right. Or maybe they sow a little discord with the people you could have helped if you had pursued that whole thing. And now there's like this whole little town or whatever that doesn't like you anymore, the players, because you just like left this thing sit and let them suffer and deal with whatever it was. And then these other people came along and fixed it. And we like them now. And you could generate a whole conflict. If you wanted to get a little tongue in cheek and a little over the top with it, you could have like, have this group of adventurers or heroes or spies or whatever come in and do everything that your players don't latch onto and just make themselves this nuisance that's in the background. Like you didn't go to help this thing quick enough. Well, they went in and took care of it and trash talked you in the process. And now you're creating a conflict group that at some point there's going
to
be a confrontation.
That's also an opportunity to build something like a flashback episode. Like if you thought they weren't interested and it turns out they actually were, they were paying attention, they want to know what happened, you could do like a B Squad flashback and have them figure out what happened, and that way you don't have to necessarily solve it. You can put the onus back on them. And
I had a GM once years and years ago who did a thing like that where there was a thing that got handled. I'm trying to remember. It was similar to this, but what he basically did was like, because we were interested in this thing, and you wanted to say, well, you know, that's been handled one way or the other. So, like for the next session, we all created new characters, went and handled that thing with those characters. And then we handed in those character sheets to the GM and they became NPCs.
That's great. No, that's like a perfect way to solve it too. It lets it kind of, again, like you're letting the players decide where you're going with it instead of you making all the decisions, which kind of takes the load off of you. I mean, those are all, I think for me, like the worry when I decide not to pursue a plot line that I had originally thought to pursue was that my players are going to notice, and they probably won't. But when they do, then you have like something in your pocket that you can pull from later. You can plan like, oh yeah, I just won't mention it. And either it will never be mentioned again or future badness. Those are the two solutions for you. I think too, also you can just be straight up with them before you even abandon it. Be like, hey, I was going to go in this direction, but we're not going to go in that direction right now because this. We're going to do this instead. How do you feel about that? Is it okay if we retcon that? Should we pretend that it never happened and go from there too? A lot of times people are chill with that. It depends. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I've done that.
I find that just happens straight up, more straight with up retcon something. Like, again, with my Tuesday group where I'm like testing mechanics and plot ideas for games that I'm writing, whereas with like finished stuff, you know, that I'm doing, like, you know, because if I'm like running D&D or Star Wars or something like that, I don't need to do that as much because it's easy enough to say that they've just abandoned a plot line. 9 times out of 10, it's like something that they don't think about anymore, so I don't even have to say anything. But with my own stuff, I might be like, okay, we tested this, and this happened a lot with Holomatics. We're like, oh, we tested this, and it turns out that this system doesn't work this way anymore. So, you know, the story is the same, but we're going to change some of how, like, the mechanics work, and like, I'm gonna need you guys to make your characters over again, and like, and they grumble, but it's like, well, I mean, that's the nature of the beast, right? This is a playtesting group, that's what happens.
I think it has to be harder when it's like a paid game. Like, oh, they're here for like a professional, and it's not very professional to completely sideline a plot. But that also happens in TV all the time. The amount of characters who just like disappear, or like, oh hey, whatever happened to this, like, does it happen super often? No, but it probably also shouldn't be happening super often in your game.
I mean when I'm doing a paid game, I find that more often than not, like 90% of, like, if I have to abandon something in a paid game, it's because the player that was pursuing that specific thing isn't coming anymore, or can't make it, or has a schedule conflict. I had a whole thing going on in, on Mondays, I do a vampire game in Bayonne. And I had a player who, I had this whole like plot line where this player who had never played vampire before, and most of the players haven't, right? And was playing a brand new neonate who, through a weird, like, set up to be like an absolute scapegoat, gets made prince of the city.
Oops.
So this guy is prince of Las Vegas, literally on his first night of creation, with no idea of what that means or what that and he was playing it beautifully for somebody that had never played before. Like, just like, yes, of course, yes, everybody bring me what I need and I am in charge. And he was nailing it. And ordinarily I would have just said, like, okay, well, that guy just died, right? Like, because obviously that's what he was set up to do. But one of the things I'm thinking is, like, rather than abandoning it, like, I kind of love the idea of, like, maybe the guys that set this guy up to fail have picked the wrong dude, right? And leave that character in as an NPC where he's like way smarter than they thought and he has become a real threat.
Yeah, which transforming a PC plot line to an NPC plot line.
Exactly.
It's a classic move. I don't actually. Yes, I believe that players should have agency over their own characters. And if they're ever going to come back, you should not mess with their characters, make them NPCs or whatever, unless you get prior permission. But if they're not coming back, they kind of forfeit that, in my opinion. This is maybe my hot take. They forfeit that character. They're yours now, and you can make them do whatever you would like to do with them.
It's a multiverse. You're in a different universe now. This is what happens to this character in this universe because they made this this choice. Your character is still doing their thing over in that other universe.
You can bring that multiverse in, or it was secretly their evil twin or all along, or whatever soap opera nonsense you want to do.
There you go.
Oh, what about
evil twin?
I feel like we gave a lot of like tips and tricks for the GMs for like what do you do with your plot lines. Do we have any other final thoughts on that before we start talking like about mechanics? Okay, great.
Yeah, there it is.
I think we can abandon that. The GMing
yes, we
side
are all
of things.
Cool with that.
We're all in agreement. We all cool with
mechanics.
That.
Knowing when to stop that. It's a little easier when you're not like when you're just writing or when you're in the original phases of things. But what do you do? Like if you're in the middle of like Sean, you've mentioned this, you're in the middle of a playtesting group. You've been using this mechanic the whole time. What do you do to sort of
that's the beauty of a playtesting group is if you, and this is very real, right? Like I've been through this a bunch of times where like that's part of the value of the playtesting group is you say, okay, we're going to abandon this mechanic. And you just watch what they say. Cause if they're like, oh, thank God, then that's the right call. But if they're all like, why would you ever do that? And then you're like, oh, you guys liked it, you know? So, or, you know, if it's something that has to go, you can be, you know, this is why. And if they're like, okay, that makes sense. Or if they're like, well, no, we really want to keep this. One of the most valuable pieces of advice that I've ever gotten on game design was at NYU from one of the professors who said three words that changed my life: chase the fun. Mm-hmm. Right? That is the most important aspect of any game, is that it needs to be fun. It needs to be playable. And he was talking about specifically video games. So he said something about like, you know, if you make a really good third person shooter, right? And then you throw in some little like mechanic about people putting on hats, and everybody who's playtesting the game is just spending all their time putting hats on their characters. Congratulations, you got a game about hats. You no longer have a first person shooter, and you need to like to follow that. You know, that's the success of it, right? And that was huge. And so this idea of what do the players want to do? What is the fun part of this game? And maybe that isn't what I thought. And there's a whole lot of sunk cost fallacy that goes into this, right? Mm-hmm.
I was just going to say that. Like, what do you like? That sucks. I wanted to make a
for
game.
Video
that was about,
games.
Yeah.
Like, I can imagine that's even worse, where there's literal like tons of money and time. And, but like, you know, that's the nice thing about being tabletop designers is we have a whole hell of a lot more agility in that department than they do. If you have an idea that you really run, you know, like you really want to do a role-playing game about, you know, ghosts in World War II, right? And everybody really gets into the mechanics that you came up with for dogfighting, and now you've got a game about World War II pilots. It doesn't mean that you don't have a game about ghosts in World War II. It just means you've got this new game about World War II pilots, which you should probably figure out. And then, you know, like put the ghost thing on a shelf. It's not gone. You're not really abandoning. And like, that's, I think, an important thing is like the only stuff that should be completely abandoned is, you know, like stuff that is utterly like, you know, if it's something where, you know, I made a great game about oppressing minorities. Yes, please abandon that. Otherwise, you know, no, like there's no reason to abandon anything permanently. I had an idea for Command Droids based on the box art of Transformers from 1984. They used to have these little stats on there, right? And I've been thinking my entire life, like, oh, why do they have those stats if they're not going to be role-playing game characters? And when I did Command Droids, I like I wanted to include those exact stats. We couldn't really make it work without complicating the game an enormous amount. And I had to kill that baby. And I was like, all right, well, it's not going to be here. That's fine. And sure enough, a situation has come up where, like, I was talking to some people in a meeting. I can't really say much about it, but like yesterday, I was like, oh, we could use the box art thing from the original. And they were like, oh yeah. And I'm like, oh, there it is. I knew I would get a chance to use this. So you never know. Like, all of these ideas can come back. It's something that, you know, you're attached to, just come back to it later. Yeah. It just doesn't have to be here.
One of the best, like, pieces of advice I had ever gotten was, like, super early on in making games for me, actually. And it was from somebody who doesn't really design tabletop role-playing games, but does other styles of tabletop games. So Elisa Teague, shout out. You gave this advice and you didn't even know it. She said that she keeps a notebook full of themes and mechanics and keeps them separate. And when they match, great, awesome. And when they don't, whatever. And then sometimes mechanics, she has a theme connected to it and the theme doesn't work and she gets rid of that or vice versa. And I thought that that was absolutely brilliant. I've started doing that. That's kind of like what Alex and I had started doing when we were making games in the first place. And I found that it's like really, really helpful. It gets a little bit more complicated when you're making like a bigger role-playing game. But then you can keep recycling through them. Yeah, I thought it was a great piece of advice. And it can be really hard. I feel like it's a little easier for somebody who's designing like a card game or something like that to decide like, oh, I'm gonna retheme this. The mechanic's great, but the theming's not so much great. I feel like, at least for me, in like the way I design games, the theme is like so important to me, and if I had to get rid of that, like, it hurts. Which is why I don't do that. I would rather just shelve the entire project and come back to it later. But like for little mechanics, like when I was designing Coven, originally there was a mechanic about having a nemesis. Like you had your own little nemesis in the game, and that was the person you were challenging and things like that. And that didn't end up working because, like, sure, did it fit with the theme of teenage girls having nemeses? Yeah, absolutely. Everyone had at least in my experience with my friends, everyone had another person at the school that they were like rivals with. But it didn't work for as soon as there was an outside enemy, none of the girls in the coven would fight anymore. Like they wouldn't go up against each other. They had an enemy now. Sometimes they'll create that enemy on their own in the game, but it kind of reduces the conflict. I had to get rid of that. Even though, I had kind of enjoyed that, part, it didn't completely wreck the theming. But it was a mechanic that just wasn't serving even if the players were getting into it, wasn't serving the purpose that I wanted from the game. It was kind of ruining the rest of the experience. So.
I ran into, I don't know if it's going to be an abandoned mechanic, but I ran into a situation where I sent just recently where I sent playtest materials to people, and about a week after I sent everything out, I suddenly hit on a better, well, what I think is a better idea for like a death and dying rule that themes better with the game and creates a particular kind of mystery about whether or not the character's dead until you go and check and that sort of thing. And I was like, that's a little more interesting. But I had already sent the materials to everybody. So as far as I know, some people are making characters. Mm-hmm. They've, you know, the GMs are reading stuff. I was like, I don't want to confuse everything. So like in the next playtest round, I'll send them this all again. I'll leave the old rule in there with strikethroughs in the text. And when I send out changed rules and changed information, and everything, I highlight it. So they'll get a document that has like everything in blue that's new or changed. And I'll put this new rule in there. And one of the questions on the feedback form will be, to compare the two rules. And, you know, like even if you didn't get a chance to have a character come close to death when you were playing the game, like, you know, just like from a thematic standpoint, what do you think works as a better rule? One of those is going to get abandoned. At some point, like one of them is going to be like not the right choice, and it might be the one that I think is better, because the playtesters might be like, nope, this one I think works best. It's clean, it does this, blah blah blah, you know, whatever reasons. Now, as the designer, you have the choice. You decide, like, the playtest feedback comes in and you decide what playtest feedback you're going to use. Yeah. And so you don't necessarily have to what everybody is saying in the in the playtest groups. But you shouldn't ignore it. You should be sure that you're give it credence. You know, you ask them to playtest for a reason, give them their due, and look at what they have to say and then make your decision. But it's just one of those, like, I think the either one of those rules could work well enough in another game or another type of game or a game that, you know, works a different way. And it's just a question of seeing which one kind of shakes out to be the right one for this game and being willing to let the other one go. Even if it is the one that, like, okay, well, this is a cool idea, but, like, maybe we'll just set this aside and we'll use it in a different game, or it'll become like a variation of what the mechanic is doing becomes some other subsystem. Even if it's not death and dying, it could be like, you know, some other portion of some rule set somewhere. I do that all the time where, like, yeah, you like little bits and pieces. Sean made the comment, like, you're not abandoning it, really. You're just setting it on a shelf. I mean, unless you do a mechanic and you play tested a bunch and you're like,
right,
this is not functioning at all, like, straight up abandoned. But the corollary to that is you're not necessarily straight up abandoning it. You might also just take the idea and do, like, you'll change it to the point that it's like a significantly different mechanic and it's no longer really the original mechanic. Like, the way it was originally just does not do anything right, because that can happen. Sure. When you're you're designing stuff and you're like, oh, I think this would be a great idea, and then you run it and it's like, nope, that's garbage, that doesn't do anything. Like,
oops, they'll have to count to infinity. Eventually they need to stop doing that. Even though, like, I'm not very mathematically inclined. I'm going to be absolutely honest. I'm good at math, but I don't like to think about it that much. so I'll like just kind of be like, yeah, that seems right. And then I'll like do it and I'll like try it out. I'm like, that was not right. This is bad. And then just write it down. I mean, even if it is a mechanic that totally doesn't work, I love this. The metaphor of putting it up on a shelf. I'm thinking of my kitchen pantry with all my little spices and stuff. Even if, like the experience of making a thing, even if you decide you hate an ingredient, well, now you know you hate that ingredient and you'll never have it in your pantry again. You've saved yourself some time down the line. So maybe you're allergic to ginger and now your life is gingerless and slightly sad, but you're not going to include it in your stuff anymore. You know, that sucks.
Save you some time. I just made a pun.
I ran into another situation where I found myself thinking one of the things to keep in mind, I guess, and this came up like literally yesterday, was to think about your game system and what the game system is, how it functions, what it does well, what it doesn't do, the things that it, the types of subsystems and whatnot that it includes, the types of like little nuts and bolts that you see in game mechanics that it does or doesn't include, and keep that consistent with what you're doing. I'm working on a subsystem that doesn't have to do with rolling dice, but it does use, it does have some things in common with the system that I'm using. And one of the things about the system is it doesn't rely on like tables of pluses and minuses. It doesn't have like, you know, +2 for this bonus, +1 for this, -4 for that, yada, yada, right? Plenty of games do, nothing wrong with that mechanic, but this game system doesn't do that. And I was having a discussion with somebody who's helping me kind of parse through this idea for this like subsystem of rules. And there came a point where we started getting into like, and then you can have like, you know, a little list of like, like you're trying to, the GM has got to assign points for something. And I have like, you know, do 1 point for this, 2 points for this, 3 points for this. And then there's like a caveat rule of like, and you can add additional points, mm-hmm, if, you know, broad scope, right? And then we started talking about like, well, what if you had like a, you know, there's a bonus of this for this and a bonus of that for that, the penalty of this, and this is how you lose points and this is how you gain points. And the more I looked at it, I had to type right into the conversation we were having, is like, this is starting to feel like a list, mm-hmm, of pluses and minuses, which this game does not do. So needed to step it back and be like, okay, how can I do this thing that is conceivably all about adding up numbers, but do it without having a list of numbers to add that you could potentially add. So it becomes like, give them a guideline, give them like, here's one cool way that you can add a bunch, and then give them the GM caveat of, and you can add more if you feel it's appropriate for XYZ. And let the GM have that discussion with the players. And you could even have the discussion with the players. And like one of the points I made in the discussion, the GM, the players are trying to, like, say the players are trying to game the system a little bit. They're trying to undertake a mission that's going to earn them X points. And they say, well, let's go do this thing. And the GM says, okay, well, that'd be worth about this many points. And the players can be like, that's not enough. Let's make it more dangerous. Let's do something more dangerous, or add on, you know, like, let's add this other thing to the mission that we're doing and make it, you know, like they want to have a greater risk reward kind of setup. And then the GM says, okay, well, you know, and they have a little barter back and forth, and they talk about like, okay, what's this group going to undertake that's going to be sufficiently dangerous that it could actually earn them something really cool if they do well, and have it be like kind of a game mechanic meta conversation. And I was like, I like that conversation at the table better than,
right,
okay, now we just look in the book and look at a chart. And we find, okay, here's the base number, and then here's a modifier, here's a modifier, here's a modifier. That's what we do. Because that conversation between the GM and the players is more of what the game system does as well. Like I was saying, it doesn't rely upon like a lot of options being listed out with very specific examples and points. And
that's also going to be a pain in the ass to lay out. It's like, that would also be a super pain in the ass to lay out.
Discussion that takes place. But keeping in mind what the system does and how it does it and what sorts of things it doesn't use,
always,
and don't
go
let
for
yourself
more conversation.
Get caught up in going less, down the path.
Less referencing. I agree. Is probably a good plan. Although I guess if you've got a game where the referencing is the really, really fun part, chase that.
There's plenty of them out there. There's table
games. Someone else's fun.
Master back in the day, role master, people called it chart master.
I like heard about it.
There's just tables upon tables. It was a gigantic failure for our group because we got tired of looking everything up very quickly. But that was, you know, there are groups that, you know, role master was played a lot by plenty of people. Some of my most favorite enjoyable games
that are solo games are just charts. They're just tables of things.
Yeah, it works for solo games.
right.
Yeah. But that's for because you don't have that conversation with a GM adjudicating anything until we can package a GM onto the page.
you're just talking about making
it
a video game.
It has to
now.
Be a list of
yeah,
a list of options.
I think like I said, abandoning a mechanic, that's like so much easier for me. Like, I don't really care. Like, if it works for the game, works for the theme, great. Have you ever had to retheme a game? Have you ever changed a theme that you had already like started working on?
Oh boy, I gotta look at my list of games. Like, did something
I have games that I should have rethemed. I didn't, but I should. Like, I would say that my first game, which I try not to call attention to because it was not good, was a game that I made about something, and it probably should have been about something else. Like but yeah, it was trying to do way too much. And I feel like that was an important thing for me, was to like, so yeah, I guess here's an example of like a way that like you can sort of retheme without like abandoning anything. Was when we first started looking at, you know, doing continuations to Remember X and staying in that field, because that had worked so well for us. We're like, okay, we're going to definitely, you know, stay with this 80s theming thing. And I was like, all right, I know what I love about the 80s almost more than anything else, maybe even more than the music and the horror movies, but it's a tight race, are, you know, the cartoons and toys of that era. That was like, I love that stuff. And so I was like, what if we just did like a book that was all of those, right? And the different, you know, splats or like character types would be like, you know, you could be, you know, a transforming robot, or you could be, you know, like some kind of super soldier, or you could be a, you know, a new wave fashion, you know, rock star. And, you know, like we had a couple of other ideas, like this idea of it being sort of all in one book, and to get it to do all of that at once. And we had a lot of conversations about that, and it dawned on me, like, this is something where I think we could actually spend some time with each of these things, as opposed to sort of trying to do everything at once, to put the lens on, like, because I realized I could spend easily 500 pages, and maybe did, just on transforming robots, right? So I was like, what, I want this to do everything, but like, it doesn't all have to be in one game. So we eventually came down to, like, you know, and it also came down to like a market, right? In you know, at the end of the day, it was sort of a bit of a business decision that, like, there is a fandom for transforming robots that exists, that we knew we could like treat as its own specific demographic. And we were pretty happy to realize that it is kind of woefully underserved by games that aren't war games, right? And even war games, it's sort of not too many of them. So yeah, we got into that okay, we're going to just take this chunk of this other game and hyper focus on this. And then we can take each piece and create a much more elaborate world by focusing on this game piece by piece than by doing all of it in one big chunk. So that was what eventually became Radical Shadows, was this, you know, idea of breaking down this idea of this game that would have all of those things. And then it just became Command Droids and now Holomatics. And then we're going to be doing, I can't announce that yet, but there's more on the way that, you know, if you know your 80s cartoons, you probably can figure out where we're headed.
Scrappy-Doo. We got it. I understand.
Oh, definitely. Definitely Scrappy-Doo. I do have, I have, amusingly enough, I do have kind of a Scrappy-Doo mechanic that I did have to abandon for that game. I literally had the idea for like a goofy sidekick that the player characters would have. And I might come back to it and try and rework it. But the original idea was that like an NPC goofy sidekick that gets you into trouble. And then I learned the shocking realization, and this is something that happens a lot with tabletop role-playing games, is that like, you're like, nobody's going to want to play this. And then everybody wants to play it.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody wanted to be Scrappy. And I'm like, really? You all want to be Scrappy-Doo? That's what you
that's wild.
You all want to be Snarf. You all want to be Orko.
This horribly maligned.
So
I get that Scrappy and Orko and Snarf are kind of different, but still, they're all kind of the comedy sidekick character.
Scrappy being so maligned that he was like, was he killed? No, he was like either a villain or the bad guy in the Scooby-Doo movie live action. But also in a very famous Scooby-Doo Dexter crossover fan fiction. there are two listeners out there who are going to be like, ah, she mentioned the Scooby-Doo Dexter fan fiction crossover, the most ambitious crossover to exist. And they're going to know. Wait,
Dexter?
Yes.
For some reason, my brain heard, what's the one with the guy who's like the psychic, but he's not really psychic.
Psych?
He's just
psych.
Yeah, I thought I was thinking that. Like,
no, I'm talking
like,
about
Dexter,
the serial killer.
Scooby-Doo. That's dark. Oh my God. Okay, yeah.
um, To answer
really?
Jess's question, yeah, Die Laughing completely changed. Yeah, the game that became Die Laughing, I had the play experience that I wanted out of the game remained. I wanted a horror game where we can kill characters or otherwise remove them from the story. And you still have something to do for the rest of the game that is not just create a new character. And the initial inception of the game was tentatively titled One of Them, where it was going to be a GM and players kind of game. And all the monsters would be not monsters that kill you, but monsters that make you into a monster. So it would be vampires and zombies and demon possessions and stuff like that. Invasion of the Body Snatchers, all that stuff. And so as you, the idea was as you played, like when your character got offed or got removed, you got changed into this other monster, you would join the GM's team and you would continue to play your vampire monster or your zombie self or whatever. And the table dynamic would shift from all the players, quote unquote, versus the GM. By the time you get to the end of the story, it's
how have
the
we
GM
never talked
and
about
all
this?
The other
That's
monsters
exactly
versus
how it
one
works
or two players.
RPG Nasty, but you're not. Your character is not there. Like, your character is dead, but you actually just become like kind of a co-GM and you're throwing bad stuff at the players.
Yeah. And that was something that I was looking at doing. This was years and years ago. This was before Nerdburger Games ever existed. This was before I even started designing Die Laughing or Murders and Acquisitions, the first game. Yes. This is like, bit way back, and it went through like it was gonna be a GM game, and I was thinking, well, maybe it'll be more like a story game, like Fiasco sort of game, maybe it'll be kind of a card based thing, and I went through a bunch of iterations on it, and it just never got anywhere. And then I put it on the shelf because none of the mechanics were doing what I wanted them to do for the play experience that I wanted to generate. And then, you know, years later, Murders and Acquisitions happened, Capers happened. And like, while I was designing Capers, I kind of revisited the idea of the horror game. And then I clicked on the idea of having it be like a movie. Like when your character dies, you become a producer or whatever on the movie. And that gives you something to do where you're not telling a horror story. You're all putting together, you're all creating a horror movie. And then the game just poured out of me. Like, I wrote that whole game top to bottom in like 3 months of free time. Once I hit on the shtick of it. But yeah, I mean, I've thought about revisiting the idea of the other game.
I mean,
but it sounds like somebody fun. Already did it.
I think we've got something very similar there.
Yeah. I was thinking about this too. I don't know if I've actually rethemed any of my games. I think, unfortunately, I'm very stubborn, and if I like the idea, it's not going to change, because I am that kind of way. I would rather just not release the game. We certainly have changed a lot of mechanics in our games as we've been designing. I guess there's like some like big parts of themes that I've taken out of games. But nothing like major, like theme wise like that. I feel like that hurts me a little bit. That hurts me a little bit more. We were told like to think about changing. We have our only non role-playing game that Alex and I have made. We've been play testing for like years now. We were advised to maybe change the theme of it, and I thought, no, I don't want to. I like the theme the way it is, actually. I don't want to change it. And we probably won't, because Alex and I are both very stubborn in that way. But we're also not like super incredibly popular game designers, so maybe don't do that. Maybe make some changes if you want to.
I find that like with the stuff that we're doing, like retheming is hard because we've so put ourselves in like a specific place, right? So like we're doing specific stuff that is all within that realm, you know? So if we came up with a game that was like a really good, you know, game about ghosts in World War II, then we would be like, all right, we're going to put that on the shelf for a long time because we just aren't in the place to be doing World War II ghost games, unless it was something that would
You haven't. Oh, there's you haven't so squeezed much all there. The juice there's out so of 80s much.
Like
toys
we got like
yet.
A 10-year plan here. That's I keep coming back to RPG Nasty. Now I'm realizing there is there was an abandoned concept in that game. That was abandoned for the right reasons. It was just basically too gross. It was too upsetting, and we realized it wouldn't, you know, and like the idea of RPG Nasty is like, you know, it's based on like these, you know, 70s grindhouse movies, and there's a lot in those movies that if you are, you know, like there's a lot of like triggers, you know, that's what they were for, you know, was to just be like the most offensive, disgusting things they could be. So there's a huge mechanic in the beginning about like what is going to make this not fun for you. And if it's not fun, we're getting rid of it. And he, you know, but like, here's what you'll replace it with. Show me what you do think is going to be fun about like, you know, horror movies. And we're going to lean into that. And one of the options for like your killer was going to be something like it's supposed to be based off of this like schlock garbage movies that we made a schlock garbage role-playing game. And we didn't even take it out of the book. We just blacked out the entire thing. It's literally like it's still
it's
in
just
there.
Just
it's just
out.
There, but it's completely redacted, and we just left it in. And like it kind of works, right? Because it is this like people are like, well, what is that? And I'm like, man, not gonna tell you.
See, I would be tempted to black that out in the PDF with objects that you could then go and like if somebody wanted to edit the PDF, they could remove those and actually read.
It's one of these where if people are really intent on getting it and I feel like I can trust them with it, then I'll give them the what like that stuff is. But like otherwise I'm just like, this is gone. But like the fact that it's blacked out sort of like works with the
lends
theme
to
of
the
like,
grindhouse nature of it. Yeah,
this being, you know, that like, oh, you know, that like censorship part of the movie both. Where it's just censored, you know, like.
I assume exactly, that the name RPG Nasties comes from the name Video Nasties. So if you know your horror movies and the list of movies that were banned in England, that were colloquially referred to as the Video Nasties.
We specifically talked to that's James Wallace and asked him to ban it, and he did. So that was nice of him.
Well, thanks, Sean, for coming to talk to us about
thank
when
you.
To
this
abandon
is fun.
Things.
Now it's time to abandon
and not,
me.
And also to ban things. yes. Yeah, and now it is. Now it is a time. Yes, I haven't done any good segues, and both of you did better segues than I've done, and I'm upset. Now it's time to abandon you. I like that. So let's abandon you now, Sean. Yeah. Sean, where can we find your stuff?
We are always, I almost said we were almost on RPG NASA. We are on Drive-Through RPG. And yes, Commandroids, Rememorex, Tempest Omni, and RPG Nasty, of course, and soon to be also Holomatics is coming soon. That's gonna be on Drive-Thru RPG. We are on Facebook and Instagram and all the other stuff, and poor Megan is doing such a good job of like keeping the social media alive. And just look for Nerdy City. We also, if you are in the New York, New Jersey area, we are at Dungeon Books in Jersey City, and we are at Victory Point in Jersey City and Fantasy Bay in Bayonne. And you can come to any of those places and ask about Nerdy City, and we will probably be there and can answer your questions personally. If not, they'll have a book and they can say, oh, they'll be here on Wednesday and then we'll come back. So yeah, that's how you can find us both online and in person.
Awesome. You can find me also on the internet at DriveThruRPG and Itch at Wannabe Games. I am on social media under Joska. That's where you can find me. I'm going to finally give up my Twitter account for various reasons. That's gonna be defunct, and I will be on Blue Sky instead, so you can find me there. Same username, same profile.
And my website is nerdburgergames.com. Games are up on DriveThruRPG. I'm at Nerdburger Craig on various social medias. I will also be dumping out of Twitter very soon for probably a lot of the same reasons that Jess is, because it's hot garbage run by a hot garbage person, among other things. Frankly, I don't get any use out of it. It's dead. It's destroyed. It's useless. But I will be at PAX Unplugged at booth 4109, 4109 this year.
I probably won't be.
You guys doing Metatopia?
No, I don't, but you're Jersey based. Let me send you a message real quick after that regarding that. But let me thank my opening and closing theme song. And the person who made it, which is Avel by Steph Sachs. Thank you, Steph Sachs, for your song, licensed under Creative Commons. Thanks all of you for listening. And we'll see you back here next time. Bye-bye. And happy Halloween!
Bye! Ooh, happy Halloween!
Bye! Ooh.